Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 281, recorded on December 18th, 2015. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This show is sponsored by MacFun with their amazing Aurora HD software, which they co-developed with Trey Ratcliffe to be the easiest way to create incredible HDR photographs. We'll talk more about them later on in the show. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as always, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. And I just have to say, I'm really excited to be going to see Star Wars The Force Awakens soon.
Good.
How soon?
Tomorrow. I'm actually going to go see it with podcast fans that...
That's right. Yeah. We've talked about this. I get to see it tonight.
Awesome. You're seeing it tonight, Adam?
10 p.m.
Sweet. Maybe I should see if I can find tickets.
My passbook ticket right now and looking at it longingly.
Ooh, shiny. Yeah, that's Adam Christensen from the MacCast.
Hey.
I wanted to mention to you, since you know it, last night around 9, I went out to get some food, and wrapping around in a giant crowd around the Fremont last night for Star Wars.
The line.
I was impressed. I didn't think that many people...
$57 million.
God.
Seriously. That's
crazy.
That's the take from the pre-release numbers. It's a new record. It beat out Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, which had the previous record at like 43 million.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
I hope I'll like it when I do eventually go see it.
Yeah, so far, and I've been working very hard to avoid spoilers.
Me too. So
all I know is that everyone that I know that has seen the movie already has really enjoyed it. And I have had to stop a couple people from talking because a lot of people, they don't understand when you say no spoilers and they say, okay, but as soon as you put the but in there, they're about to give you a spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And as much as I don't like the whole, you know, spoiler alert, I don't, it makes sense for a movie that literally came out today and they saw an early screening.
Yeah, and for a movie like this, I want to be able to enjoy the same sense of wonder and surprise that they got to experience when they saw it earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all we need to say about it.
I guess, yeah.
We're going.
Yep.
We're excited. And we'll meet you on the other side.
I don't have any tickets for
it.
I should probably figure out how to see it, right?
Yeah.
I didn't get the one thing I'll say is I didn't get the lineup thing per se, but I guess that's because the theater I'm going to has reserved seating, so I already have my seat picked out.
You have a fancy theater.
It's not even that fancy.
It's a
new thing I guess a lot of theaters are doing is reserved seating is becoming the new trend, which I like.
I do too.
I like it too.
Is that a Regal theater you're going to?
Yeah. Yes, I believe so.
Well, that is a fancy theater.
Yeah, Cinemark is doing it as well.
Might be an Edwards. I don't know.
Hmm. I just remember.
It says on my ticket, right?
I just remember going to a Regal, not knowing what I was doing, and it was one of those late night decisions that we were like, "Hey, let's go see Jurassic World," and. We were looking online for movie prices, for ticket prices, and I was like, geez, $20 for a movie. And he's like, yeah, man, movies are expensive now. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And just not thinking about it.
I didn't want to pay $20 for my ticket.
Yeah.
It's not a fancy theater, I'm telling you.
Okay, yeah. So, that was my first experience going to a Regal, and I was like, wait a minute, there's like a freaking butler here. I guess that makes sense why it's $20.
That's more like Cinemark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Theaters where they have a little table between you and they'll bring you like beer and stuff.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
That is nice. I've gone to Cinnabar and seen a few movies, and it's great. You know, they bring drinks to you. They bring you this big bowl of popcorn. Ooh. So it's, you know, you're not eating out of the little bag, the popcorn that was popped last week. It's freshly popped and brought right to your table. It's awesome.
I guess if I went to see Star Wars, I probably should. I know my girlfriend doesn't care at all. She doesn't care at all to see Star Wars, but I should probably bring her with, right?
Yeah, you need to take her with you, and you need to sit down and have a serious talk with her about this lack of interest in Star Wars.
No, that's fine. I don't have much of an interest in Star Wars either.
You're dead to me.
I mean, for what it's worth, I really, really wanted a Millennium Falcon when I was a kid for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I got it.
Get that.
And I loved the crap out of that thing until it was just in pieces and didn't work anymore. I think I overdid it as a child. Mm. So.
All right. So here's what I did when I got my Millennium Falcon, because I was so excited. I started pressing the button and it did this screechy sound, which is supposed to be the laser cannons.
Mm.
And it was horrible and it was stupid. So I whipped out a screwdriver and I disassembled the whole thing and I rewired it.
So it wouldn't make that button, that noise?
Well, you hit the button and I had a light up cockpit and control panels and stuff in mine.
Cool. All right.
It's a wonder I ever had dates.
Yeah.
For all of
us. So that's this week in movies.
Yeah, in Star Wars.
What's happening in this week in Star Wars. What's happening in the iOS world?
Well, you were mentioning before the show that you were thinking about
the pick that both Jeff and I wanted to do of this great app, which is awesome, which is an app that a lot of people have actually asked me about recently.
Yeah, tell me all about it because I don't know.
Okay,
anything.
Well, so first you've got to get the backstory of. Have you heard about this trend of adult coloring books?
No, I don't think so.
So there's this new trend of adult coloring books in, like, I guess, I don't know, millennials and people are flocking to Target to get, like, special crayons and, like, there's this whole
special
movement
crayons.
Going on. Yeah, I guess they're special, like, double-sided crayons somebody was telling me about recently.
That's weird. See, I'm a purist, and I have my own box of Crayolas, and then I have... I'm just weird, I guess. I have a separate box that the nieces get to use when they come over.
Yeah, I think the idea here is that we are all completely...
insane.
Stressed out to the point where we need ways to decompress. And so basically there are these really intricate coloring books. A lot of it reminds me of almost not Art Deco. What's the style I wanted to say? Art style.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called, but what these coloring books for adults remind me of are the pattern color books that we could get back when I was a kid. So that would have been, a long time ago, actually. They look like pretty much the same to me. They're just marketed to adults now.
Yeah, so they're super intricate. And the idea here is that you can just sit down and color and decompress, and you're kind of doing this really kind of, I think, busy work. But, you know, it gets your mind off of things. You're just, like, focused on this real intricate pattern and these little areas and stuff like that, and which is fine. That's all cool and stuff like that. But a lot of people had been asking me since the iPad Pro came out and the Pencil, they're like, hey, do you know any good just like coloring book apps, either for my kids or now it sounds like for myself? And there really wasn't any until today. This app comes out, and I got to pull it up here because I keep forgetting the name. It's called Pigment. And it's basically these really intricate designs that you can then, it's got a bunch of different coloring tools and they're really well put together. So you've got a bunch of palettes that you can pull up. You've got a color picker. You have different markers and brushes, and there's, you know, a paint bucket for filling in large areas. You can even fill in large with gradients and stuff like that. And the, you know, as you're drawing, it looks like the kind of tool that you're using. So if you're using a colored pencil, you know, it's giving you the texture and stuff like that. You can tap on some of the areas and have it masked out to make it easier to color, or you can just free color. So it's like, oh, this app is awesome if, you know, for people who are into this stuff and want to just do coloring on the iPad. And especially if you want to use the iPad Pro with the pencil, it also has 3D touch support, I think, on the iPhone. You know, so it's got the pressure sensitivity. You can use the side of the pencil. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. This is going to be my pick.
Yeah.
Right?
It sounds nice.
Okay.
It sounds therapeutic. It does.
It's a free app. So I went into it thinking, okay, it's a free app. There's going to be in-app purchase. That's fine. I get that that's going to be the model. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking probably what they're going to do is give me like a free set of coloring pages, you know, for free. And then I'm going to have to maybe buy individual books like you would in the real world. I'd go out and buy, you know, a coloring book with 50 drawings in it or whatever. And I get to color all those drawings as much as I want. That would be awesome. And sure enough, you go in there and there's a library of all these great coloring books. And then you tap on one and they give you a couple for free in each book. And then there's a little gem symbol by a lot of them. And you tap on the gem symbol and here's where it all goes to hell. 7-day free trial.
Ooh.
Then $1.99 a week. You get access to 150. You get access to every coloring book that they have. Maybe I don't want every coloring book. For $1.99 a week, $4.99 a month, or $25 a year. Which I guess, I get what they're going for. You put it in perspective, these adult coloring books, they're like 10, 15, 20 bucks a piece. So you buy one of the, you know, you buy this app and you pay 25 bucks a year. But now I've got to pay 25 bucks a year, like for forever. I don't, you know. So it's the subscription model rearing its ugly head.
And in a very ugly way this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it just feels like, I just wish I could, like, there was a Ocean Creatures coloring book, and it's like, I'd pay $4 or $5 just for that. And what's not clear is, if I sign up for the subscription, if I start coloring one of these premium pages, and then I let my subscription last, do I get to keep that page? Because there's kind of like my work section. So once you started coloring something, it adds it in there. Is it going to delete it? Do I get to keep it? So there's some questions to be answered. It was like, oh, here's the ugly side of what we've created by not allowing developers to sell stuff for what they want to sell it for.
Now, do you think that's still because there's no free trial in the App Store? There's no ability for a trial?
I think it's because they want a reoccurring revenue model, and maybe they're not convinced that people would just buy books. So, you know, here we can make sure that we've got a revenue stream coming in every month so that our business is sustainable. I kind of give them kudos for like at least thinking about that and going, look, you know, we spent a lot of time and effort developing this thing and we need to make our money back on it. But at the same time, it's just, I can't start paying $5 a month for everything in my life. I'm going to go broke.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what everybody wants, whether it be entertainment subscriptions for the channels and stuff I want, down to software apps, and now even just things like little creative apps. But I fully might be willing every few months to spend $10 on like one of these virtual coloring books. But I'm not given that option. My only option is either I can have nothing or I have to pay every month.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess related to that is there was an executive shakeup at Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday.
Do you really think it's a shakeup?
Well, probably not. Yeah, Thursday. Not so much of a shakeup. I guess it was. I think
another restructuring.
Probably something where it's been working this way for a while, and they decided to make it official. So related to this, Phil Schiller is now in charge of App Store. What's his official additional title?
I don't remember. But he's still Senior Vice President of Worldwide Marketing.
Good.
So this is just something else that's been added to his plate.
Yeah. So Schiller, he's taking over App Store leadership. I guess that's as much as you can say.
What does that mean?
I don't know. exactly what that means.
What I hope it means is that Apple really understands that there's a problem with developers and the Mac App Store, and they needed to do something. So they put the developers' champion, so to speak, on the job.
The timing does seem to feel like that, right? Because there was all the critical analysis that happened, what, a week or two ago of the Mac App Store within the community, and it sort of got echoed, and then happened. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How was that manifested? I'm not sure I know.
There were several key developers sort of, again, calling into question the fact that the Mac App Store especially, is really broken.
Oh.
There were a bunch of developers who left. There was another major developer who left said we have to leave the Mac App Store.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm blanking on which developer it was. But, it goes along the lines with I think was it Barebones that just left, or had they left previously?
Barebones left a while ago.
Okay. But you have companies like Barebones, and you have companies like even Omni to a certain degree. I mean, Omni has stuff in there, but, they still struggle with Mac App Store stuff. And, just the sustainability of being a developer in the Mac App Store, because you don't have upgrades, because you don't have free trials, a lot of developers are opting out. They're going, look, we tried to put our stuff in there, but it's just too painful.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that that's a completely different situation from the iOS store, because now you're dealing with developers who have a history with creating apps for the Mac, and they have a way of doing things that have been sustainable.
Right.
And Apple is trying to bolt on the way that they've been doing things with iOS to the Mac, and it seems to be shaking out that it doesn't work out for these developers.
Yeah.
And so they're able to kind of create a more effective message by saying, okay, we tried it, it didn't work out, and so we're leaving because we don't have the things that we need, such as paid upgrades and free trials.
Right. But here's the thing on the iOS side that I don't like, is that a lot of people then point to the iOS store and go, well, the iOS store is not broken because because it was started that way. Like, developers on iOS knew what they were getting into. The rules were, being defined as they started selling software. So it's not like they were doing things one way and then things were taken away from them, right? They just, here's the rules, here's the parameters, here's the world you have to live in, and go develop apps. And I get that to a certain degree. The problem is that the same issues exist in the iOS store. So the ones that they're trying to push into the Mac App Store are still issues for a lot of developers in terms of the ability to be sustainable on their products by selling upgrades, by, giving trials and stuff like that. And because of that, you end up with, again, getting back to this coloring book app, these convoluted schemes that developers have to come up with that really are annoying to consumers. But at the same time, as frustrated as I am about that, as I mentioned earlier, I totally understand why they built their app like this, why they made it a subscription app. If I were developing an app, that would be a model I would seriously pursue, because it's one of the few models where you're going to be able to get continuing revenue. Because they're not going to be able to put a new version of this app out, 6 months or a year from now, and then charge an upgrade price for it. They either have to charge a whole new full price, or they're out, give it away for free, which is just dumb. Sorry, Jeff. I think Jeff was going to chime in.
Well, I mean,
that's all right. You've been doing an excellent job of expressing how I'm feeling. So so feel free to continue to speak for me, because you're actually more eloquent than I would be right now, because the words that keep coming to mind for me are crap and stupid.
Well, I mean, if you look again at the type of apps that you see on the Mac versus the type that you see on iOS are very different in terms of how vast and powerful they are. And on iOS, of course, they can be quite vast and quite powerful. You know, as for example, you can see an app like Numbers, for example, I think is a very good example because it does almost everything that the Mac app does, and that's a crazy powerful app. But if you look at things like what Omni is doing, I think Omni is a good example because they have both Mac and iOS apps, and they're very there's a lot of feature parity there. Mm-hmm. They're one of the few developers that actually charges what the apps are worth. But you don't see very many $40-$50 apps on the App Store because they just don't get purchased.
Well, yeah. I mean, and so bringing it back to like this Pigment app, you know, would I have paid $10 for it or the app to have all of it, or would I have paid $25? I mean, because really the fact that they priced it at $25 a year says to me that is the price they really probably wanted to sell the app for.
Mm.
Right? Here's 150 different, you know, coloring book designs for $25, but they knew no one would buy it for that.
Well, do right? you think that...
So then they go, we'll do the subscription model thing.
Do you think that the it would have made more sense for them to have a, you know, a one or two free designs that you could use, and then...
Well, and they already have that, so that's great.
But I mean, then beyond that, you'd pay a couple bucks for each book.
Yeah, that's the model I would have preferred as a consumer, I think, because it sort of mimics more the real world thing that someone would do. You know, it's like you would probably buy one coloring book and some crayons and you'd pay X, right? And then if you wanted more, you go out and you buy another book.
Yeah.
And you have that book to use. Here the really big problem I'm having is I can either choose to just download it for free. And what I'm going to do is, because there is some cool images here that I can use for free, I'm just going to use it for free, and they're going to get probably nothing from me.
Yeah.
What's going to happen for me, too.
I'm going to go with the dozen images that they give for free, and I'm just going to continue to use those. I would like to buy this one book that has all these sea creatures in it, but I don't want to pay $4.99 a month for the privilege. I would probably pay $4.99 one time, but I don't have that option. So it's just, it puts them in a weird place. But I get that, you know, if you look at the pricing, $24.99 for everything, yeah, I could do that too. And I might even be willing to do that one time. And, you know, I have access to everything, but they want a reoccurring thing. So they want it so that when I forget in a year that I did this, because there's really no way to track it unless I guess I log into my iTunes account and I go look at my subscriptions. I guess I could do it that way. But they're hoping you're going to forget, and then 12 months from now they get another $25.
Yeah.
And they don't have to give me anything extra for that extra $25.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming they will. I'm assuming they're going to continue to update the app, and that's why they want the reoccurring revenue. I mean, that's the whole point of having upgrade pricing and all this other stuff that we're talking about, right? Is so that developers can continue to add features, but then get compensation for those. And then the customer benefits from being a loyal customer and doesn't have to pay full price every time, you know, they do a new app. But the way it is now is developers have to put out a new app, and their only choice is they either sell it at a lower price so that their existing customers can get the benefit of not having to pay full price, right? That's why we get this stupid, oh, for the next 2 weeks, if you buy it, it's $4.99, and after that, it's going to go to $9.99.
Well, right. Which sucks for developers.
You know, sucks for developers because for 2 weeks, guess what? Anybody new coming to the platform also gets the upgrade pricing, and they're not even existing customers yet. So it's not like a loyalty reward. They're just getting the advantage of everybody else, and the developers ending up making less money off of new customer acquisitions. And maybe that benefits them in the long run because maybe that customer sticks around and buys the next version when it comes out again. But it's just, it wouldn't be that hard for Apple to allow upgrade pricing. It really wouldn't. They have a record that I've bought the app. When I go into the App Store, it could simply say instead of, you know, when the new version comes out, instead of buy or download, it says upgrade. So you have a download button to download the existing version that you've already paid for, or right next to it, there's a little, you know, it's a little split button and it says upgrade, $4.99. And then the people that haven't purchased it before just get the buy button and it's $9.99. I mean, it's a simple thing. Or they could do it with an app, you know, an in-app thing. Even better, right? I already own the app. I open it up. It says, hey, there's a new version of this app, a new update. Would you like to upgrade? And it's $4.99. Press this button. And boom, it upgrades.
You know, I think the problem, you already said it's simple, and I think you're right. I think the problem is that Apple, for whatever reason, has this philosophical thing about no upgrade prices, no free trials. And they're treating the app stores like their own retail stores, where you go in and you buy something and leave, and then you get to really play with it. But then... I guess, okay, so I'll play devil's advocate to myself for a moment. You can walk into an Apple store and you can play with many of the products that they sell before you actually buy them.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, and it's sort of the same thing with free trials. There's no reason an app couldn't time out after 30 days of using it and then pop up a message, say, hey, you've used it for 30 days. What do you think? Do you want to buy it? Here's the buy price.
Yeah, yeah. I think they just need to. There's something stuck in the leadership that they think that it needs to be this way, and they haven't. For some reason, nobody's been in there to say otherwise.
I mean, there's other things that affect developers' bottom line with these stores too. I mean, the fact that everything's family licensing, they didn't get a choice in that either. You know, so
that's a really good point.
You know, I automatically get licensing for all my family's devices, which is great. And I don't think that's as big an issue for developers. I think these other two are bigger ones, but it still is another revenue model and another form of revenue that they did get for a while and it's been sort of taken off the table.
It's crazy. And it doesn't seem to be working out.
Well, here's the thing is the problem is Apple then points to, you know, the few champions and the few people that get lucky and maybe have a killer app and it sells a million copies and makes a ton of money, but there's a lot of other quality app developers and Mac developers that are really struggling with this sort of new order and this new way of selling apps. And the bummer is if this stuff isn't fixed in the long run, we're going to lose a lot of those developers in our community. They're going to get tired and frustrated and just go, you know what, it's not worth it anymore. I can go get another job doing something else and provide for my family and not have the stress that I have in this environment.
Well, they could also just, I mean, in terms of the Mac store, they can actually just leave the Mac store and just develop.
And that's what's happening. But again, so getting to the Phil Schiller thing, that all hit the fan, you know, a couple weeks ago and was pretty publicly done and vocal. So what I'm hopeful on the Phil Schiller thing is that, just like Jeff said, they're putting a guy who has pretty good relationships with the developer community in charge of the App Store system, and hopefully he'll be a more bendable ear, I guess, in terms of these issues, and will actually make some action on it and really think hard about, okay, maybe we thought that was the right choice back when we made it, but here we are many years later, developers have tried to work within the system that we set up, and they're still telling us that these things are pain points. Maybe it really is time to reevaluate and think about this stuff and see if there's a compromise or some sort of thing we can do, you know, to make this work. And that's what I'm hopeful about. So, you know, hopefully that's what's going on.
Yep.
The timing certainly seems to indicate that maybe that's what happened.
Yeah. Now, as far as the other one, Jeff Williams was named COO. And that, what is he, the, how many chief level positions are at Apple? I think it's maybe four.
You've got Johnny, Tim, Jeff.
And Laura.
And the
Maestri.
CFO, right?
Yeah, CFO.
Luca Mestreri. Mestreri?
Yeah, so he's the fourth. So, I mean, Tim, it's funny, there's a weird resemblance between him and Tim. So he's... Jeff Williams. So he's taken over Tim's old position before he was CEO.
Right. Right. So just going back to the App Store thing, who was in charge of App Store stuff before? Was it Eddie?
I think it was Eddie. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this is a really good move because Eddie's
got to be crazy spread thin.
He's spread thin. And also, I don't know that Eddie was ever that close to the technical developer side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. He's more a music guy.
Yeah.
Services, that sort of thing. Yeah. So, moving on, Ming-Chi Kuo at KGI Securities, he believes that the iPad Air 3 will be released in the first half of next year, but it won't have 3D touch. And he believes it's because there are production issues with that.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. In addition, he believes the iPhone 7's 3D touch will be identical. I guess it won't have any sort of additional refinements or any of that sort of thing.
Also not surprising to me at all.
One of my personal thoughts on 3D touch and it coming to iPads and us not seeing it in iPads is I think there's some stuff on the software side that Apple needs to work through in scaling up 3D touch for a larger screen, meaning that I don't think they could get away with putting it on an iPad and only using peak and pop kind of functionality that we have now. It seems like it should do more on a tablet.
So another story from Apple Insider. They believe that that Apple is working on scaling 3D touch for iPads and iPhones, but.
Yeah, see, and I think that makes sense. I think they're trying to think through some of the use cases, like where does this get more advantages because we have more screen real estate, which is the stuff they've always done, right? Is they look at each one of the devices. It's not just taking the iPhone interface and scaling it up and making it work on an iPad. You know, it's like we want to build software hooks and things that developers can leverage for this specific platform to take advantage of the hardware technology that we've built in. You know, it's not, they put it through its paces a little bit better than that. So I as frustrating as it is, I think, for people to think that we're not going to get 3D touch on an iPad anytime soon, I think it's the right decision for Apple to sort of work through the stuff on the software side and make sure the software and the hardware, you know, match perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And they have to think about exactly how they want the interface to work when it's scaled up.
Yeah, and I don't even know what those things would be. Like, I don't even know what I would want from 3D touch on an iPad, but I just kind of feel like I'd want more than just peak and pop. I mean, peak and pop would be great and cool, but, you know, even like the peak and the pop in, say, like a user interface, say, like in the Mail app, I mean, does it make sense for it to just kind of work like on the iPhone, or should it work a little bit differently?
Yeah, and I suppose those are the sorts of questions they're working over. Now, more interestingly to me, and those who don't have the S line yet, how often do you guys use?
I forget to use it, to be totally honest.
I use it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So how do you use it? And then I'll tell you how I use it.
I don't. I always forget to use it. And then when I like accidentally like turn it on, I'm like, oh yeah, that's really cool. I should use that more. That's literally.
I should use that more, and then you forget about it for another 3 days.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, and I see the updates like this app got, you know, 3D touch support. And it's like, oh yeah, I have that feature. I think I totally forget about
it. Now, why do you think you forget about it? Is it because it's too much of an issue to keep in your head which apps allow it?
I think that's a little bit of it. Yeah, for sure. And maybe I just haven't found the killer use case where I'm like, this is really going to just change my life. That might be part of it, too. Like, every time I see it, I'm like, oh, that's cool that they can do that. But then I think, you know, what is it really doing for me that is significant enough for me to remember to use it?
I can see it being a big deal in Safari. So you do like a Google search and you do a peek on a few different links, you know, yeah. And then when you find the one you want, you pop that.
All right. That would be kind of cool.
So what's your use case, Jeff?
It's a navigation thing. That's I use it almost exclusively for that. So what I do, or the way I use my iPhone, I'm jumping between apps a lot. So I'm typically just double tapping the home button over and over and over so that I can jump between applications. Now I do the firm press and slide on the edge of the screen. And that's my big force touch thing.
No, I never use that one. I totally forgot about that one. I can never activate it properly.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem.
When I tried it a few times, it didn't seem very easy to activate.
Well, yeah, the first few times I did it, I couldn't get it to work right. But once my finger figured out how firmly to press and where, then it turned into something I use all the time.
Ah.
But you see, there's another problem. We have this force touch, and now we have different ways we can touch our screens. And depending on how we touch them or how much pressure we apply when we touch, different things happen. And while I'm really liking force touch, I'm also concerned that the overall way of interacting with our mobile device interfaces through iOS is starting to get complicated enough that one of the things that drew people to the platform in the beginning, ease of use, it just works, you don't have to think about it, is going away.
Yeah, I'm having the same experience on my iPad now with video apps that have that feature where it undocks the video when you hit the home button. You know what I'm talking about?
The picture in picture?
Yeah, the picture in picture thing. So you're, yeah, you know, you're watching something on YouTube and I don't know what it is about my habits over the years, but I've started doing this thing where I hit the home button to be done with it. With
and it throws video. It into picture in picture.
And then it throws into picture in picture.
How do I get rid of the stupid picture in picture?
Well, at least it's not like YouTube where you have to flick it over to the side, which is just obnoxious.
Right, it's got a little close.
There's a little close. So it's not difficult to get rid of it, but it's one of those things where I don't know that there has been a situation where I've triggered it intentionally.
Right.
Because I can't understand. I mean, as cool of a feature as it is, I don't think I've ever used it. I've really just accidentally triggered it and closed it. Yeah, but it's one of those things where I know like I can that. Turn it off, but I feel like at some point I'll want to use it. So it's kind of a pain point there. Same deal with the swipe back and forth gesture to go back and forth in web pages, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Going back, that works. But now, going forward, brings up multitasking, which is insane. And that is one of those things that I do use fairly often. And it drives me nuts.
On the picture-in-picture video thing, if you made the mistake of trying to swipe it away because you're used to the YouTube thing, and then I discovered a new feature that way.
I like that feature. That's a nice feature.
Where you can slide it to the side.
And it kind of docks it off to the side, yeah.
Yeah, docks it off the screen with a little like pull back in tab.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was a feature of picture-in-picture. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
You should totally watch the picture-in-picture how-to video I did.
Probably.
Because I go through all that stuff.
Yeah, it's just, I don't multitask that way. I can't like sort of have a video watching, be playing and then like reading an article. That just drives me nuts. I know people can't do that.
You need more Adderall, Adam.
I don't know.
The place that I...
like the kids these days.
Yeah. The place I see me potentially using the picture-in-picture is if I'm doing a FaceTime chat with someone, but I need to be looking at something else on the screen. You're like,
that would be great.
Yeah, like I need to look something up, but I still want to be able to see them while I'm talking to them.
I will likely use it for the next Apple keynote.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, see, that's...
So that I can have my Omni Outliner up on my iPad Pro, and then the picture-in-picture video of the live stream running, and I can take my notes as I'm watching the video.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
So, and I would imagine students, like if you're taking an online course and you have to watch a video lecture or something like that, that could be handy there.
Yeah. I mean, it. You might think it's handy, but it's probably a terrible idea too, because then you're going to be rewinding that video 20 times and then realizing you shouldn't be looking at Facebook while you're trying to watch your lecture. You should just watch your lecture.
No. I mean, watching the lecture and have a notes app like Notability or Omni Outliner up to be actually taking notes from the lecture.
Yeah, I guess I could see that, but I'm telling you what's going to happen.
Not That's surfing awesome. Your Facebook?
It's going to be surfing the Facebook and the Instagram and checking your
Snapchats. Yeah, and I don't know if I'll do picture in picture or I might just do split screen. You know, I don't know.
I do like That's the split screen. Too. Split screen makes, and you both have the pros now, so you can really enjoy that split screen.
Yeah, it's not quite too full with apps though, which gets a little weird. So most of the apps are kind of squished just slightly, and so the UIs are not perfect.
Yeah, they're close, but not quite.
Yeah, and it's weird. A few times I've used that feature.
Yeah. And speaking of 3D Touch, I guess it's according to the Wall Street Journal, the Galaxy S7 and the S7 Edge are going to feature pressure-sensitive displays that function similarly to 3D Touch.
Of course.
I mean, I was pretty surprised when I heard this. I wasn't expecting Samsung to copy Apple. That's kind
of... No. This is innovation.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's innovation. Yeah.
And you know how Samsung said that they were inspired for the design for their smartphones by looking at a bowl of water? And assuming they have done something similar here. But
I thought they were going to be honest and say that they were inspired by the iPhone. But no, I guess it was inspired by a glass of water. That's insane.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
Bowl of Jell-O. I don't know.
I like that. Inspired by a bowl of Jell-O. All right, we have a lot more to talk about, but first we have to talk about our sponsor, MacFun with Aurora HDR at aurorahdr.com/TIOSS. Aurora HDR is the all-in-one app for making incredible professional HDR photos made by the award-winning photography software developer MacFun and the world's most famous HDR photographer, Trey Radcliffe. Aurora HDR features an easy-to-use, versatile workflow for every style of HDR. No need for Photoshop, Lightroom, or any other app. It's the first all-in-one HDR photo editor with revolutionary tone mapping algorithms, native RAW support, powerful detail and color adjustments, layers, custom textures, presets, and more. And of course, the result is ultimate freedom to craft your best HDR photos. Some of the features include, of course, like I said, the next generation tone mapping algorithms, which is how professional HDR photos are put together. It has automatic alignment, chromatic aberration correction, and anti-ghosting tools so you don't get those ghosted images from multi-exposures. It has advanced controls for color and HDR detail, clarity, and structure. It includes a ton of HDR presets that make creating that perfect look incredibly easy, and every one of those presets actually shows you exactly how it tweaks things, so you can learn exactly how to fine-tune your photographs to do it like a pro, and you can end up learning how to do that by yourself, make your own presets. It's really cool. You can create multiple layers of effects in a breeze, do things like increasing the HDR effect in only certain portions of your photos while painting out the effect in other areas. It's crazy easy to do. It includes a high quality native RAW photo processor, so you don't need any other apps if you shoot in RAW. There are custom textures and luminosity masking. It has plugin support for Aperture, Photoshop, and Lightroom, and they just added a photos editing extension which lets you use Aurora right from within the Photos app on your Mac. It's really nice. You don't even have to open up Aurora when you're browsing through your photo library. You just click edit and just it edits right within that same interface. It's really cool. And they have incredible HDR denoising tools in there that make even dark, grainy photos look naturally smooth. There are so many other features in this app. It's really incredible. And best of all, MacFun is running a special holiday offer on Aurora HDR. The holiday offer is good from November 10th December 10th through the 31st. It comes with four bonuses, including Pro Training by Trey Ratcliffe, and has a 30-day money-back guarantee. Aura HDR is normally priced at $260, but you can get it for just $99.99. Go to aurahdr.com/tios, T-I-O-S-S, and get your free trial today. It's so awesome. Check it out. I mean, thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. Okay, so with that, Apple has seeded a new beta of iOS, iOS 9.2.1, to developers and to public beta testers. Do you think public beta testers actually send them feedback?
Some do. Most, I'm assuming, don't.
I'm really bad at that. And you know what? You know what's the worst is I have maybe 4 responses. This is bad. 4 responses from Apple developer bug reporting requesting more information. And I'm like, that sounds like work. Oh God, I'm so bad at that. Like I went through and I actually went to the trouble
of the problem, not part of the solution. Like,
well, I thought I did a little bit. I didn't know I had to do more work after I spent 10-15 minutes on these initial feedbacks, documenting exactly what was going on, and now it's like, oh, I don't want to do any more.
Yeah, all I wanted to do was tell you.
Now go fix it.
I didn't want to help.
Shut up. at least I've kept it in my inbox. I didn't just trash it, so maybe I'll get to it at some point. I don't know what the statute of limitations is on the bug reports. They probably closed them all.
When they fix it, then it's probably too late.
When they fix it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when it's fixed, it's fixed.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So don't send them the bug report after they've already fixed it.
Yeah. Don't like be like, oh, here's the stuff that you requested now that you fixed it. That would be past the statute of limitations.
Yeah, I guess. So, yeah, well, the one bug that still bothers me, it's been in there since, God, it had to have been iOS 6. So basically when you pair Bluetooth headphones with iOS, it occasionally will drop the ringer volume to... I haven't really done enough experiments to figure it out, but it's either to like one or two dots on that little volume thingy, or it's probably the volume that you have your headphones set at. So it gets confused and sets your ringer volume to that, but it only happens occasionally. And I'm surprised that bug is still there. It happens constantly for me. And it's one of those things that they want me to send them, I don't know, some sort of console thingy for when it happens. And I'm like, look, just do it. You guys don't have headphones at this point?
Well, does Apple still make their Bluetooth headset? They don't, right?
No.
Okay, well, there you go. Then why would this be something they need?
No, headphones, not headset.
Oh. Well.
And I mean, they're getting rid of the lightning port or the headphone jack. But that, I guess it'll be replaced with a wired connection to Lightning, right? I still have my my Apple Bluetooth headset.
That's like a collector's item now.
I know. The battery's absolutely shot, though. I wish it was cooler.
Yeah.
Anywho, let's see. Apple Music, according to an analyst... Mark Mulligan at Music Business Worldwide, he believes Apple Music will have 8 million subscribers, 8 million paying subscribers by the end of the year, and 20 million by the end of 2016, which is pretty impressive. The one thing that I thought was more impressive about this analyst in particular was that he actually gave some words regarding the fact that his estimates may be way off if certain things don't play out. And I don't usually see that when you get something from an analyst. It's just kind of cut and dry. This is what's going to happen. But of course he says, you know, there's a potential situation where someone who had a free trial, they forgot to cancel. And so there was the paying subscription, but it's only going to last for a month, that sort of thing. But you know, I think that Apple Music at this point is probably the thing that most closely resembles what RDO subscribers wanted. And now that RDO is gone.
No, it's gone next week.
Well, okay, yeah.
But yeah, maybe those RDO people, or at least a substantial number of them, will move over to Apple Music.
Well, at least the people I know who are using RDO. And Apple Music is available on Android as well. And by some accounts I've seen, is nicer on Android. Have you heard this?
No, tell me about this.
That's all I know. That's literally all I know, is that people say that it's nicer on Android. I don't have an Android phone, so I'm talking out of my butt here. I would be very interested to get a deeper dive on, you know, why, if true, why it's nicer on Android. So if anybody has experience with that, Adam, I know you have an Android phone. Why aren't you on top of this?
I don't have an Android phone.
What happened to it? I thought you had one. For your, like, a $30 a month unlimited data or something.
I have an old cruddy one.
Oh, it does not do what you want for Android?
It's like ancient.
No.
So, oh, yeah, now I remember we used to talk about your Android phone. That was like years ago, Michael.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know what goes on.
What was that, like iOS 5 days?
Oh, it was good back then. Okay, so Apple Music. There you go. Matt Keeper, everyone's favorite annoying adware. I guess it's not adware. It's just an ad.
Yeah, we see the ad everywhere. But what they say is that they have system
cleaners.
Cleaner utilities, stuff like that.
Virus protection, right? Stuff like that. All these kind of fantastical sorts of things. And before we dive into it, is there any credibility to their stuff?
Are they?
No, they're not. They're not good at their stuff at cleaning your Mac, and this just kind of.
They're good at installing adware on your system.
So it's crapware. It doesn't do anything.
I don't know. I should be careful. I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah, there was an episode of the Mac Geek Gab a few years ago where Dave talked about the fact that it actually does stuff.
There's the old company and there's the new company. The problem is ZeroBit, the company that originally developed it, sold it to another company.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I think things went really wrong.
Yes. Yeah, there was a time when it was a perfectly acceptable tool. But yeah, I think that's back when it was ZeroBit.
Okay. Yeah, and I think it's funny that even like my mom knows about MacKeeper. She doesn't know anything about Mac software, except for the stuff that I put on her computer, but she knows about MacKeeper because everybody sees the ads. Monday, a person on Reddit posted saying, hey, I've never heard of this company before, but I was just kind of poking around and I realized that this company has an unprotected database just hanging out with all of their customer records, phone numbers, IP addresses, system information, usernames, addresses, email addresses, password hashes. And one of the things about it is they were using MD5 hashes for their passwords, which isn't it? What is the recommended as SHA?
2 now, but I think it used to be 1, although 1 is being thrown out, or not thrown out, but people are being advised
deprecated.
SHA-1 anymore.
So it sounds like it's MD5 can be, how easily?
Very.
Yeah.
Like, could I do it? Would it take me an hour or a minute on my just one computer to crack a password?
I don't have the actual details.
Okay.
I just know for a long time, MD5 has been.
MD5 is old.
Thrown out.
Yeah. I mean, back when I was developing.
It's been relatively trivial to hack for quite a while.
Yeah. I mean, back when I was doing Appler in 2010. When I first started that, I was advised to not use MD5 because it was easily crackable then. So, But yeah, so the, I guess the most astonishing part of all of this was not that they had stuff hanging out in the open. I think it was more that they had 13 million customer records.
So,
which is crazy.
I guess the advertising paid off, right?
So yeah, I guess so.
Wikipedia says there was a flaw found in MD5 in 1996, and that's when people were told to start using SHA-1.
Wow. So who's like kid put this database together for them? Like, oh yeah, John's son knows this stuff. Let him do it.
Yeah. It says it wasn't a fatal flaw, but I mean, I think that led to the fact that it's pretty easily crackable.
Yeah. So I guess it was, it's since been closed. It wasn't even a vulnerability. It was just them having an open, unsecured database.
Yeah, it's just they've done some, and it's not just this, you know, it's their advertising practices.
Aggressive advertising.
Anybody who's been to speedtest.net, I'm sure, has clicked on their Deviant, you know, click here to test your computer button. You think you're
I haven't seen that.
Doing a speed test, but you're clicking on an ad and then you get a million pop-ups and the pop-ups don't go away. So they do that sort of stuff. And then there have been issues with the software. I don't know if currently, but I do know that at one point the software was installing like basically adware onto your computer. So you would be surfing Safari and you'd be getting pop-ups and you wouldn't realize why. And they were actually coming from software that was installed. I don't know if it was deliberately or if it was accidentally, you know, like their installers got, I don't know, you know, the reason why, but I know I've cleaned off some of my clients' computers because they had installed Mac Keeper and there was adware put in place.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate on so many levels. And I just get that pit, you know, that feeling in the pit of my stomach every time someone sends me a message. They're like, hey, I'm having trouble with my computer and Mac Keeper isn't fixing it. I'm like, oh no.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I don't know if they've been a sponsor of this show. They've been a sponsor on my show, but, Clean My Mac.
Oh yeah.
MacPaw is great. So if you're looking for that,
I think Clean My Mac might have been a sponsor of this show.
Yeah,
I do occasionally use it. Maybe I should run that. I don't like that some of the. I mean, some of this stuff does. They add a bunch of like listeners, that sort of stuff in the background.
You can turn all that stuff off.
It's a little more difficult than you might think with like Clean My Mac. At least there's stuff that you turn off in preferences, sure, but it doesn't get everything because I would recommend to any geek actually Lingon, mm-hmm. the old version. I like the old Lingon.
Well, there's also Onyx, which has been a great tool,
but Lingon specifically, have you used Lingon?
I have.
Version 2.1.1 is what I have. And it's basically, it lets you look at all of your agents and daemons on your computer and very easily enable, disable them.
It's a very nerdy tool, though.
It makes me very happy. It's one of the, maybe that's a carryover from my Windows days when I spent a lot of time in the
resource manager or
the thing that lets you see all the stuff that starts up with your computer. This is one of those things.
What's that thing called? I'm not getting the name.
I can't
remember what you're exactly
computer management, about. Something like that.
The registry.
No, right? I didn't really mess with the registry. There was another thing that let you look at stuff that just turned on when you started your computer, but yeah. So
anyway,
Mac Keeper, if you had it, if you ever gave them any of your info, make sure you change your passwords. Everyone has your password, whatever you used for Mac Keeper. And of course, PSA, 1Password.
Yeah. I mean, people that listen to this show don't use the same password everywhere, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, because they're really smart people.
Yeah, we're giving them the benefit of the doubt, even though I'm one of those people who like up until like 2 years ago was using the same password for everything.
Well, we weren't talking about you, Michael. We're talking about
smart people. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Let's just talk about how much better using one password is getting. I've started using it for my two-factor, which is awesome.
How does that work?
So you know how you when you use two-factor, a lot of places want to do, you scan the QR code and then it sets up like Google Authenticator or whatever?
Okay.
That functionality is built into the 1Password app now. So you go in, you edit your record, and then when it asks you to scan the barcode, you scan it with 1Password, and it puts that generator inside 1Password. So when you pull up 1Password to get your password to plug into the site, you also have the authentication number right there, so you don't have to open a separate app.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, 1Password makes me very happy. All right, I need to do happy. That. I don't use, I do 0 2-factor authentication at this point. And I'll probably be that way for another 10 years, and then it'll be
I've been slowly migrating all my 2-factor authentication codes from Google Authenticator into 1Password.
Cool.
So I don't have, eventually will not have to have Google Authenticator installed on my phone anymore.
It seems like a good thing.
Yeah, Google Authenticator is a good app. I mean, it's fine, but it's just one less app.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you can do your 1Passwords with your new Apple TV now because of the app, because the remote app works, as we mentioned last time. But I feel like it bears repeating that you can type in all your crazy 1Password passwords now.
Hey.
That makes me happy.
BBC iPlayer, speaking of the Apple TV, BBC iPlayer is finally available to residents of the UK. Although I suppose you could probably download it anywhere, maybe. It's not going to work unless you verify that you're in the UK.
No, I think you have to get it through the UK App Store.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of those situations where I would really like to give them like $10 a month to get access to their programming.
There are so many people that would do that.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I would throw money at them.
Yeah, it's weird. Is there any information on why? Is there a reason why they can't do that?
I think
legally?
It has to do with the licensing agreements to show their content outside of the UK.
Probably also has something to do with isn't the BBC a government agency?
Yeah.
And people in the UK pay taxes to fund the BBC, so outside we wouldn't really be paying taxes to fund that.
Well, you're not paying taxes, but you're still paying fees, because if you're watching BBC content, then you either have BBC America, which, you know, that money's a chunk of it at least goes back to the proper BBC. Then you have the BBC apps that we can get outside of the country. And so they're getting money for that too.
But is BBC a for-profit entity, I guess is what I'm asking, or is it solely funded via the I don't understand. I never understood how British TV worked, but I did know that BBC is somehow linked to the government, right? Because everybody has free TV or whatever, right? Am I right on that, or am I totally off on that?
That's a good question. I
well,
know
this is
you
something
pay
we need
a
to
tax
ask on
per
the,
television.
Yeah, on the Mac show.
Yeah.
So if they're a for-profit entity, I guess that would be okay. But maybe it complicates things if they're like selling direct to outside of the UK, and with how the money needs to be handled. I've just often wondered if that's part of the problem too, along with the licensing stuff.
I can see where that would be an issue.
Yeah. Okay. So moving to the last thing that we have, Charlie Rose on Sunday is going to be inside Johnny Ive's secret design lab.
Right, and also in Angela Arendt's prototype store.
Oh, yeah, that's a cool picture. I like that picture. So they've shared 60 Minutes on Twitter has shared two screen caps, and one of them being the new store, And the neat thing about it is it doesn't look like the new store has the doesn't look like it has a Genius Bar. Or maybe it does. I don't know. Perhaps they've changed it. It just looks different. But that'll be cool to look at. There's also the pick from Johnny Ive's secret lab, which has a lot of cool looking machines.
Yeah. As well it should.
Yeah. I'm sure they have some metal 3D printers in there. Which are like the coolest things ever.
See, and I always pictured his lab with like the Tesla coil with the two wires coming out at the top, so the little electric arc is going zzz, zzz, stuff like that.
Oh yeah. Making the that's how they birth the Apple products.
Yeah.
Totally. That's probably going to be in there. So on Sunday, what is that? ABC?
CBS.
Okay, CBS is weird. They're really weird about their stuff. But
I'm pretty sure it's CBS. I'm double checking right now. It is CBS.
Okay, yeah. So hopefully we'll be able to I'm sure there will be maybe a YouTube or a...
Well, you can get CBS All Access.
Ugh.
Hey, that's going to get you access to the new Star Trek series when that launches in early 2017.
I think they have that for Apple TV, right?
CBS yes. app, yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
You can try it for 1 week for free, so if you just want to see
maybe it's time to sign up. I think 60 Minutes is on Hulu as well.
If you have Hulu. 1 week for free.
Yes. So with that, I think it's time for picks. And Jeff, you have one locked and loaded?
I totally do.
Sweet.
Okay. Mine, it's actually a website, but it's a website you want to go to only if you have an iPhone 6S or 6S Plus, because otherwise there's just no value in the site to you.
Okay.
And so the URL, hold on. I can't read it from here.
Are we going to put it in the show notes?
Yeah, we need to put it in the show notes.
Oh, okay. And
yeah, so it's like PLTARun.github.io/scale or something like that.
Okay.
Anyhow, what it is, it's a web page.
Ooh.
That uses the Force Touch on your iPhone as a scale.
That's fun.
And so what you have to do is set down some sort of conductive material on your iPhone screen.
Something metal.
Yeah, something metal. And then it has a little tear button. So you tap that, and then it re-zeroes out. And then you set stuff on top of the piece of metal, the spoon, whatever it is that you've put there. And then it weighs whatever it is that you've set on your iPhone.
That's cool.
It's really cool. I mean, as far as practicality goes, no. But that's completely irrelevant, because this is just wonderfully cool. Someone built a website that turns your iPhone into a scale.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was right. PLTARun.github.io/scale. That's it.
Nice. It'll be in the show notes, too.
Oh, and thanks, Terry, for pointing that one out for me, UROC.
Cool. Man, I wish I had one of those fancy pressure phones now. Adam.
All right. I'm going to do a really killer companion pick to a pick I did, I think, a while back. So you guys remember when I talked about the new ViewMaster VR?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That you pop your iPhone into, and then you can get like 3D virtual reality kind of stuff. And the fact that that thing is a 100% Google Cardboard compatible viewer.
Yeah.
So Google Street View app is going to be my pick. And the reason is, there's a couple reasons.
There's app called Street View?
Yeah, Google Street View. But what's cool about the latest version, and I don't know when this was updated, I think it was just recently updated to support Google Cardboard viewers. So you can take any street view that you find within the app and put it into Google Cardboard mode. There's a little Google Cardboard button, and it turns it into the stereographic image that you would then pop into your Google Cardboard or your ViewMaster viewer, and you can do like 3D panoramas. And that's cool enough, right? Because Google has street views all over the world, and you can kind of, you know, go down your street. But also in the app is they have the ability for people to create spheres from their photos. So you can create your own 3D panoramas of any spot and then upload those into the Google system, into the Street View system. So people are going all kinds of remote places all over the world and creating street views in full 3D, and you can turn those into Google Cardboard things, so you can basically visit any place on the entire planet. And
that
including,
is so cool.
Including now
Adam's house?
Underwater.
Oh, that's cool.
So like survey companies are going out, and Google themselves are going out under the ocean and like mapping underwater reefs and things like that.
So in case you're like planning to take a submarine trip and you want to
swim around and see the fish, and it's really cool.
You know, the first probe that lands on the moon now, whenever this happens next, needs to have the proper cameras so they can grab all the photos and we can do this. So we can look at the surface of the moon.
I bet they have.
Right.
They have
Mars, I think.
They must have Mars. I wonder if they have. They must have it on Google. I know
there's Google Mars, I think.
They have. There are definitely 360 immersive panorama thingies that have been taken on Mars by Curiosity. And I believe all of that photography is open. To
yes.
everybody. And
yes,
so
that's totally correct. All of that government photography, because it comes from taxpayer money, belongs to the taxpayers. So it's all just open for us to use as we please.
Yeah. And I've experienced a VR headset Mars thingy. So I wonder if you can do that on this.
Cool. One last thing on this Google Street View thing. The other thing that they've done is they've started gathering these things into collections. So you can like go through multiple VRs of a certain location. So there's like Machu Picchu here in Petra, scrolling through Australia, Ecuador, Bolivia, Portugal, Great Walks of New Zealand, all kinds of New Zealand ones.
Cool.
TV studios and sets. They have airports. So if you want to visit different airport terminals all over the world, you can do it all from the comfort of your living room with your Google Cardboard and this app.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So go take a virtual trip.
Yeah,
they have 104 oceans.
104 oceans. That's crazy. All right.
The humpback whales off the Cook Islands.
Ooh, I want that. I want to do that. I want to see
this.
Cool. Have you ever been whale watching?
I'm whale watching right now underwater.
Adam is in a different place now. I need to go whale watching.
On and whoa, look at that. I'm going to go over here now.
I like this. How much is that thing on Amazon again? What is it called?
The ViewMaster VR?
It's like $29.
ViewMaster VR.
And you can pick them up at Target also. Yeah, they're $29.
I could just have Amazon send it to my house, and then I wouldn't have to remember to go to Target.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, or you could just get a free Google Cardboard viewer somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. Does it have to be pink? This one looks pink.
It's red.
Oh, it's red? Okay, red is fine, I guess.
You need to recalibrate your screen.
It's ViewMasters have always been red. That's the
Yeah.
Well, they did occasionally blue and I think green, but yeah, the primary color's always been that red.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
And Street View is free, so.
It is. It is indeed. So I should put that ViewMaster thingy in here again.
So everybody can go out and then make a one of your own of your yard and then submit it up there.
Or your bedroom.
Let us know so we can go stand in your yard.
And we'll just stay there.
Look in your window.
Yeah, put something cool in your window, like your cat or something. So my pick this week is a free app. It's a screensaver, actually, for your Mac, called Arial. It's free, and it's on GitHub. So what it does is it brings all those cool Apple TV screensavers to your Mac. All the Apple TV 4 live, they call them live screensavers? I forget what they are.
Oh, yeah, like the slow shot going up Market Street in San Francisco.
Yeah. So yeah, you can get those on your computer. I believe if you already got it, maybe a few weeks ago or when it first came out, they've added caching support. So I would recommend updating, because these are some like ginor videos. And if you're just downloading them every time you run your thing, your ISP might be upset. So yeah, it's kind of fun, these screensavers. It's bad that I have electricity paid for as a part of my apartment, because I just leave my TV on and just oogle the or ogle. What is it? Oogle, ogle? I ogle my TV all day. I just leave it on and
it's really bad because Michael has a CRT.
How'd you know? No, I have an LCD from 2007, so it's maybe just as bad. But one of the cool things about the screensaver on the Mac is it gives you a lot of options for which screensavers you want, and you can actually flick through and preview them. You can tell it which ones you want, which ones you don't like, and they're always adding more. Apple is so. Mm-hmm. This thing is pretty cool. I need to have another look at it, actually, on my Mac. So, yeah, check it out. It's just a screensaver. I don't think you need to do anything special to make it work. You just double click it, and you do the right click and open thing because it's an untrusted developer. But pretty sure it's fine.
Oh.
Adam's still often in some place.
There was a story that popped up in my thing. Tim Cook calls the notion of Apple avoiding U.S. taxes political crap. Quote, unquote, total political crap.
Well, how is that?
That's just what he said.
But that's what they're doing.
No.
No, it's not?
No, they are acting totally within the law.
That's why he's calling it crap.
Yeah, quote, and if unquote, lawmakers don't like it, they need to change the tax laws, which is something Apple's been saying for a long time.
Oh.
Here's the quote. Apple pays every tax dollar we owe. End quote.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's... yeah, I mean, they're avoiding paying taxes, but they're not doing it illegally.
Right. It's just like every other person. You go through your taxes, you figure out what you can do legitimately to not have to pay as much. You're avoiding paying some tax.
Totally. I don't want to pay taxes.
I do that every year when I do my taxes. I figure out how much of my
works.
Business expenses I can offload so that I don't have... Is that avoiding taxes?
Yes.
No, it's... No. That's how it works.
Right.
That's how the system is set up to work. They're working within the way the system is set up to work.
Yeah.
It just so happens that because they have ginormous piles of money, it's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
I found it funny that Tim says quote unquote crap.
That is fun. Good for Tim.
I can't wait to see that soundbite.
Political crap.
Well, you know, someone's going to edit the political part out. And there's going to be a great...
It'd just be Tim going, crap, 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 crap,
total crap,
crap,
crap, total crap,
crap, total crap.
I like that. Get on that, people. Okay. So with that, our iPhone picks in the show notes can be found at theiosshow.com. You can review the show in iTunes, rate it, tell a friend if you know somebody who would like the show. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your feedback and questions and comments and all that stuff. There's also a comment thread going on theiosshow.com for every episode. And this show is sponsored, of course, by MacFun with their amazing Aurora HDR software, which they co-developed with Trey Ratcliffe. Check them out, aurorahdr.com/TIOSS. We thank them for their support. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, maccast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. And yep. Thank you for being here.
Where you find me? Hey, thanks for having me.
Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer. MacObserver.com, TMO Daily Observations, and at Jay Gamet on Twitter.
And it's always awesome to be here.
It is awesome to have you. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and I think that's it. We'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus.